in a foil casing on his table. "I'm not meant to give customers pills, obviously, but these are great. Only thing that works for mine. Don't drink any more coffee, though. It'll make it worse. I'll get you some water."
He blinked at her, then down at the pills.
"It's okay. They're nothing dodgy. Just Migragon."
"That's very kind of you."
"They take about 20 minutes, but then, oh, relief."
Her smile wrinkled her nose. Kind eyes under all the mascara he saw now. A sweet, open face. A face whose emotions had not yet been battered by experience. She took away his coffee mug, as if to protect him from himself. Ed found himself thinking about Jess. Good things happen. Sometimes when you least expect them.
"Thank you," he said quietly.
"You're welcome."
And then his phone rang. The sound echoed in the roadside cafe, and he gazed down at the screen as he stemmed the sound. Not a number he recognized.
"Mr. Nichols?"
"Yes?"
"It's Nicky. Nicky Thomas. I'm really sorry to bother you, but we need your help."
Chapter 21. Nicky. It had been obvious to Nicky that this was a bad idea from the moment they had pulled into the car park. Every other kid at that place, apart from maybe one or two at the most, was a boy. Every single one was at least 2 years older than Tans. Most looked like they were not unfamiliar with the Asperger's scale. They wore wool blazers, bad haircuts, braces, the overly scruffy shirts of the properly middle class. Their parents drove Volvos. The Thomas family were Aldi to their Waitrose, generic ketchup to their pesto. Tansy, in her pink trousers and denim jacket with the sequins and felt flowers that Jess had sewn on, was as out of place as if she had been dropped there from outer space. Nicky knew she was uncomfortable. Even before Norman had broken her glasses, she had grown quieter and quieter in the car, locked in her own little world of nerves and car sickness. He had tried to nudge her out of it. This was actually an act of epic selflessness, as she smelt pretty bad. But by the time that they had hit Aberdeen, she had retreated so far inside herself that she was unreachable. Jess was so focused on getting there that she couldn't see it. She was all tied up with Mr. Nichols, the glasses and the sick bags. She hadn't considered for a minute that kids from private schools could be just as mean as kids from MacArthur's. Jess had been at the desk registering Tansy and collecting her name tag and paperwork. Nicky had been checking out Mr. Nichols's phone, so he hadn't really paid any attention to the two boys who went and stood next to Tansy as she peered up at the desk plan at the entrance to the hall. He couldn't hear them because he had his earbuds in, and he was listening to Depeche Mode without really noticing anything at all. Until he caught sight of Tansy's crestfallen face, and he pulled an earbud from one ear. The boy with the braces was staring at her, a slow up and down. "You are at the right place. You know that the Justin Bieber fan convention is down the road." The skinnier boy laughed. Tansy looked at them with round eyes. "Have you been to an Olympiad before?" "No," she said. "Quelle surprise. I can't say many Olympians bring furry pencil cases. Have you got your furry pencil case, James?" "I think I forgot mine. Oh, dear." "My mum made it for me," Tansy said stiffly. "Your mum made it for you?" They looked at each other. "Is it your lucky pencil case? Do you know anything about string theory?" "I think she's more likely to know about stink theory. Or, hey, James, can you smell something unpleasant? Like vomit? Do you think someone's a bit nervous?" Tansy ducked her head and bolted past them into the loos. "That's the gents," they cried, and fell about laughing. As the boys made to walk into the main hall, Nicky stepped forward and put his hand on the back of Brace's neck. "Hey, kid. Hey." The boy spun round. His eyes widened. Nicky moved in so that his voice was a low whisper. He was suddenly glad that he had a weird yellow tinge to his skin and a scar on the side of his face. Dude, a word? You ever speak to my sister like that again, anyone's sister, and I will personally come back here and tie your legs into a complex equation. You got that? He nodded, his mouth open. Nicky gave him his best Fisher Psycho stare, long enough for the boy to do one of those massive Adam's apple bobbing gulps. Not nice being nervous, is it? The boy shook his head. Nicky patted him on the shoulder. Good. Glad we're straight. Go do your sums. He turned and began to walk towards the loos. One of the teachers stepped in front of him then, one hand raised, his face questioning. Excuse me, did I just see you wishing him luck? Yes. Great kid. Great kid. Nicky shook his head as if in admiration, then headed for the gents to fetch Tansy. When Jess and Tansy emerged from the ladies, Tansy's top was damp where Jess had scrubbed at it with soap and water, her face blotchy and pale. You don't want to pay any attention to a little squit like that, Tans, Nicky said, climbing to his feet. He was just trying to put you off. Which one was it? Jess's expression was flinty. Tell me, Nicky. Yeah, because Jess going in all guns blazing was going to be exactly the start to the competition that Tansy needed. I don't think I could recognize him. Anyway, I sorted it. He kind of liked the words, I sorted it. But I can't see, Mum. What am I going to do if I can't see? Mr. Nichols is getting you some glasses, don't worry. But what if he doesn't? What if he doesn't even come back? I wouldn't have done, Nicky thought, if I were him. They had totaled his nice car, and he looked about 10 years older than when they had set off. He'll come back, Jess said. Mrs. Thomas, we need to start. Your daughter has 30 seconds to take her seat. Look, is there any way we can delay the start by a few minutes? We really, really need to get her some glasses. She can't see without them. No, madam. If she's not in her place in 30 seconds, I'm afraid we'll have to start without her. Then can I go in? I could read her the questions. But I can't write without my glasses. Then I'll write for you. Mum! Jess knew she was beaten. She looked over at Nicky and gave a vague shake of her head that said, I don't know what to do. Nicky crouched beside her. You can do this, Tans. You can. You can do this stuff standing on your head. Just hold the paper really, really close to your eyes and take your time. She was staring blindly into the hall. Beyond the door, the students were shuffling into place, dragging chairs under desks, arranging pencils in front of them. And as soon as Mr. Nichols gets here, we'll bring the glasses into you. Really, just go in and do your best, and we'll be waiting here. Norman will just be on the other side of the wall. We all will. And then we'll go and get some lunch. Nothing to stress about. The woman with the clipboard walked over. Are you going to take part in the competition, Costanza? Her name's Tansy, Nicky said. The woman didn't seem to hear. Tansy nodded mutely and allowed herself to be led to a desk. She looked so damn little. You can do it, Tansy! His voice burst out of him, suddenly bouncing off the walls of the hall, so that the man at the back tutted. Back of the net, Titch! Oh, for goodness sake, someone muttered. Back of the net! Nicky yelled again, so that Jess looked at him in shock. And then a bell rang. The door closed in front of them with a solid thunk, and it was just Nicky and Jess on the other side with a couple of hours to kill. Right, said Jess, when she finally tore her gaze away from the door. She put her hands into her pockets, took them out again, straightened her hair and sighed. Right. He will come, said Nicky, who was suddenly not entirely sure he would. I know that. The silence that followed was long enough that they were forced to smile awkwardly at each other. The corridor emptied slowly, apart from one organizer who murmured to himself as he ran his pencil case down a list of names. probably stuck in traffic. It was pretty bad. Nikki could picture Tansy on the other side of the door, squinting at her papers, looking around for help that wouldn't come. Jess stared up at the ceiling, swore softly, then tied and retied her ponytail. He guessed she was doing the same. And then there was the sound of a distant commotion, and Mr. Nichols appeared, running down the corridor like a crazy man, and holding aloft a plastic bag that looked as if it might be entirely full of pairs of glasses. And as he launched himself at the desk and started arguing with the organisers, the kind of argument that comes from someone who knows there is no way in the world he is going to lose. The relief Nicky felt was so overwhelming that he had to go outside, slump against the wall and drop his head to his knees, until his breathing no longer threatened to turn into a huge, gulping sob. It was weird saying goodbye to Mr. Nichols. They stood by his car in the drizzle, and Jess was acting all, oh, I don't care, even though she obviously did. And Nicky really wanted to thank him for the whole hacking thing, driving them all that way, and just being, you know, weirdly decent. But then Mr. Nichols went and gave him his spare phone, and he was so choked that all that came out was this weird, strangulated, thanks. And then that was it. And he and Jess were walking across the campus car park with Norman, and both of them were pretending they couldn't hear Mr. Nichols's car driving away. They stopped by the corridor, and Jess stashed their bags in the cloakroom. And then she turned to Nicky and brushed non-existent fluff from his shoulder. And her voice was so brusque that for a moment he didn't notice her jaw was really, really tight. "Well," she said, "let's go and walk this dog, shall we?" It was true that Nicky didn't talk much. It wasn't that he didn't have stuff to say, it was just that there was nobody he really wanted to say it to. Ever since he had gone to live with Dad and Jess, when he was 8, people had been trying to get him to talk about his feelings, like there were a big rucksack he could just drag around with him and open up for everyone to examine the contents. But half the time, he didn't even know what he thought. He didn't have opinions about politics or the economy, or what happened to him. He didn't even have an opinion about his birth mum. She was an addict. She liked drugs more than she liked him. What else was there to say? Nicky went to the counselling for a bit, like they said. The woman seemed to want him to get mad about what had happened to him. Nicky had told her he wasn't angry because he understood that his mum couldn't look after him. It wasn't as if it was personal. If he had been any kid, she would have dumped them just the same. She was just sad. He had seen so little of her when he was small that he didn't even really feel like she was anything to do with him. But the counselor kept saying, "You must let it out, Nicholas. It's not good for you to internalize what happened to you." She gave him 2 little stuffed figures and wanted him to act out how your mother's abandonment made you feel. Nicky didn't like to tell her that it was the thought of having to sit in her office playing with dolls and being called Nicholas that made him feel destructive. He just wasn't a particularly angry person. Not with his real mum, not even with Jason Fisher, although he didn't expect anyone to understand. Fisher was just an idiot who didn't have the brain power to do anything but hit out. Fisher knew on some deep level that he had nothing, that he was never going to be anything. He knew that he was a phony, and that nobody liked him. Not really. So he turned it all outwards, transferred his bad feelings to the nearest available person. See? The therapy had done something useful. So, when Jess said they should go for a walk, a little bit of Nicky was wary. He didn't want to get into some big conversation about his feelings. He didn't want to discuss any of it. He was all braced to deflect. And then she scratched her head a bit and said, "Is it just me, or does it feel a bit weird without Mr. Nichols?" This was what they talked about. The unexpected beauty of some of Aberdeen's buildings. The dog. Whether either of them had brought plastic bags for the dog. Which of them was going to kick that thing under the parked car so that nobody trod in it. The best way to clean the toes of your shoes on grass. Whether it was actually possible to clean the toes of your shoes on grass. Nicky's face, as in, did it hurt? Answer, no, Not anymore. Other bits of him, as in, did they? No, no, and a bit, but it was improving. His jeans, as in, why didn't he pull them up so that his underwear wasn't always showing? Why his underwear was actually his own business? Whether they should tell Dad about the rolls? Nicky told her she should pretend it had been nicked. What would he know? And it would serve him right. But Jess said she couldn't lie to him because that wouldn't be fair. And then she went quiet for a while. Was he okay? Did he feel better for being away from home? Was he worried about going home? This was where Nicky stopped talking and started shrugging. What was there to say? This was what they didn't talk about. What it would be like if they actually went home with £5,000. If Tansy went to that school, and he left school before sixth form, whether Jess would want him to pick her up from St. Anne's every day. The takeaway that they would definitely get tonight in celebration. Possibly not a kebab. That Jess was plainly freezing, even if she insisted she was fine. All the little hairs on her arms were standing bolt upright. Mr. Nichols, most notably where Jess had actually slept the previous night. And why they had kept stealing looks at each other like a pair of teenagers all morning, even while they were grumping at each other. Nicky honestly thought she thought they were all stupid sometimes. But it was kind of okay, the talking thing. He thought he might even do it more often. They were waiting outside the doors when they finally opened at 2 o'clock. Tansy walked out in the first batch, her furry pencil case clutched in front of her, and Jess held out her arms wide, all braced for celebration. So, how was it? She looked at them steadily. Did you muller them, Titch? Said Nicky, grinning. And then abruptly, Tansy's face crumpled like it had done when she was little, and fell over, and there was a 3-second gap between whatever bad thing had just happened and a gigantic bad thing wail coming out. Jess grabbed her and pulled her close, maybe to reassure her, maybe to hide the shock on her face. And Nicky put his arm around her on the other side, and Norman sat there on her feet. And as the other kids filed past, some of them chatting, a few silent as they looked at Tansy, she told them what had happened through muffled sobs. I lost the first half hour, and I didn't understand some of their accents, and I couldn't see properly. And I got really nervous, and I kept staring at my paper, and then by the time I got the glasses, it took me ages to find a pair that fitted me, and then I couldn't even understand the first question. Just scan the corridor for the organisers. I'll talk to them. I'll explain what happened. I mean, you couldn't see. That's got to count for something. Maybe we could get them to adjust the score to take it into account. No. I don't want you talking to them. I didn't understand the first question. Even when I got the right glasses, I couldn't make it work the way they said it should work. But maybe I messed it up. Tansy wailed. I don't want to go over it. I just want to go. You didn't mess anything up, sweetheart. Really. You did your best. That's all that matters. Jess kept stroking her back, as if that could make it all better. But it's not, is it? Because I can't go to St. Anne's without the money. Well, there must be... Don't worry, Tans. I'll work something out. It was her least convincing smile ever. And Tansy wasn't stupid. She cried like someone heartbroken. Nicky had honestly never seen her like that. It actually made him want to cry a bit too. Let's go home, he said, when it became unbearable. But that made Tansy cry harder. Jess looked up at him, her face bleached and completely lost, and it was like she was asking him, Nicky, what shall I do? And the fact that just for once even Jess didn't know made him feel like something had gone really wrong with the world. And then he thought, I really, really wish Jess hadn't confiscated my stash. He didn't think he had ever needed a smoke more in his life. They waited there in the hallway as the other competitors fell into groups or shared sandwiches or retreated into cars with their parents, and just for once Nicky realised he did feel angry. He was angry with the stupid boys who had put his little sister off her stroke. He was angry with the stupid maths competition and its rules that wouldn't bend a tiny bit for a little girl who couldn't see. He was angry that they had come all this way across an entire country just to fail again. Like there was nothing this family could do that turned out right. Nothing at all. When the hallway had emptied finally, Jess reached into her pocket and wrenched out a small rectangular card. She thrust it at him. "Call Mr. Nichols." "But he's halfway home by now, and what can he do?" Jess bit her lip. She half turned away from him, then back again. "He can take us to Marty." Nicky stared at her. "Please, I know it's awkward, but I can't think what else to do." "Tansy needs something to help her up again, Nicky. She needs to see her dad." He was back within half an hour. He had just been down the road, he said, having a bite to eat. Nicky thought afterwards that if he had been thinking more clearly, he might have wondered why Ed hadn't gone very far, and why it had taken him so long to get a snack down him, but he was too busy arguing with Jess. "I know you don't want to see your dad, but..."
"I'm not going."
"Tansy needs this." Her face had that determined set, where you knew she was making out that she was taking your feelings into account, but actually she was just going to make you do what she wanted you to do. "This is really not going to make anything better. For you, maybe. Look, Nicky, I know you have very mixed feelings about your dad right now, and I don't blame you. I know, it's been a very confusing time." "I'm not confused." "Tansy is at rock bottom. She needs something to give her a lift, and Marty is not that far away." She put out her hand and touched his arm. "Look, if you really don't want to see him when we get there, you can just stay in the car, okay?" "I'm sorry," she said, when he didn't say anything. "To be honest, I'm not exactly desperate to see him either, but we do have to do this." What could he tell her? What could he tell her that she would believe? And he supposed there was 5% of him that still wondered if he was the one who was wrong. Jess turned to Mr. Nichols, who had been leaning against his car, watching silently. "Please, will you give us a lift to Marty's?" "His mum's, I mean. I'm sorry, I know you've probably had enough of us, and we've been a complete pain, but I haven't got anyone else to ask. Tansy, she needs her dad. Whatever we think of him, she needs to see her dad. It's only a couple of hours from here." He looked at her. "Okay, maybe more if we have to go slowly, but please, I need to turn this round. I really need to turn this round." Mr. Nichols stepped to one side and opened the passenger door. He stooped a little so that he could smile at Tansy. "Let's go." They all looked relieved, but it was a bad idea. A really bad idea. If only they'd asked him about the wallpaper, Nicky could have told them why.
Chapter 22. Jess. The last time Jess had seen Maria Costanza was the day she had delivered Marty to her in Liam's brother's van. Marty had spent the last 100 miles to Glasgow asleep under a duvet, and as Jess stood in her immaculate front room and tried to explain her son's breakdown, she had looked at her as if Jess had personally tried to kill him. Maria Costanza had never liked her. She'd thought her son deserved better than a 16-year-old schoolgirl with a home dye and glittery nails, and nothing Jess had ever done since had changed her fundamental low opinion of her. She thought what Jess did with the house was peculiar. She thought the fact that Jess made most of the children's clothes herself was willfully eccentric. It never occurred to her to ask why she made their clothes, or why they couldn't afford to pay someone else to decorate, or why, when the overflow blocked, it was Jess who ended up under the sink wrestling with the U-bend. She had tried. She really had. She was polite and didn't swear or pick at bits of herself in public. She was faithful to Marty. She produced the world's most amazing baby and kept her clean, fed, and cheerful. It took Jess about 5 years to grasp that it wasn't her. Maria Costanza was just one of life's lemon suckers. Jess wasn't sure she had ever seen a smile break spontaneously over her face, unless it was to report some piece of news about one of her friends or neighbours, a slashed tyre or a terminal illness, maybe. She had tried to ring her twice on Mr. Nichols's phone, but got no answer. Granny's probably still at work, she told Tansy, ringing off. Or perhaps they've gone to see the new baby. You still want me to head over there? Mr. Nichols glanced at her. Please, I'm sure they'll be home by the time we get there. She never goes out in the evening. Nicky's eyes met hers in the mirror and slid away. Jess didn't blame him for being negative. If Maria Costanza's reaction to Tansy had been lukewarm, her discovery that she had a grandson she hadn't even known about was met with the same enthusiasm as if they had announced a family case of scabies. Jess couldn't tell if she was offended that he had existed for so long without her knowledge, or whether her inability to explain him without referring to A, illegitimacy, and B, that her son had been involved with an addict, meant that she just found it easier to ignore him altogether. You're looking forward to seeing Daddy, Tans? Jess turned in her seat. Tansy was leaning against Norman, her face solemn and exhausted. Her eyes slid to Jess's, and she gave the smallest of nods. It will be great to see him. And Granny, Jess said brightly. I'm not sure why we didn't think of it sooner. They drove in silence. Tansy dozed, resting against the dog. Nicky sat and watched the darkening sky in silence. She didn't feel like putting music on. She didn't dare let the children see how she felt about what had happened in Aberdeen. She couldn't let herself think about it. One thing at a time, she told herself. Just get Tansy back on track, and then I'll work out what to do next. You okay? Fine. She could see he didn't believe her. She'll feel better once she sees her dad, I know it. She could always do another Olympiad next year. She'll know what to expect then. Jess tried to smile. Mr. Nichols, that sounds suspiciously like optimism. He turned to her, and his eyes were full of sympathy. She was relieved to be back in his car. She had begun to feel oddly safe there, like nothing really bad could happen while they were all inside it. She tried to imagine the reception they would get from Marty's mother, especially once the older woman discovered they were all going to have to stay with her overnight. Jess pictured being in the front room of Costanza's little house, trying to explain the events that had led them there. She pictured Marty's face when she told him about the Rolls-Royce. She saw them all waiting at a bus stop tomorrow, the first stage in an interminable journey home. She wondered briefly whether she could ask Mr. Nichols to mind Norman till they got back. Thinking about this made her remember how much this whole escapade had cost, and she pushed the thought away, one thing at a time. And then she must have nodded off, because someone had hold of her arm. Jess? Jess, I think we're here. That sat-nav says this is her address. Does this look right to you? She pushed herself upright, uncricking her neck. The windows of the neat, white terraced house gazed unblinking back at her. Her stomach lurched reflexively. What's the time? Just before 7. He waited while she rubbed her eyes. Well, the lights are on, he said. I'm guessing they're home. He turned in his seat as she pushed herself upright. Hey, kids, we're here. Time to see your dad. Tansy's hand gripped Jess's tightly as they walked up the path. Nicky had refused to get out of the car, saying he'd wait with Mr. Nichols. Jess decided she'd let Tansy go in before she went back and tried to reason with him. Are you excited? Tansy nodded, her little face suddenly hopeful, and, just briefly, Jess sensed that she had done the right thing. They would salvage something out of this trip if it killed her. Whatever issue she and Marty had could be sorted out later. They paused to gaze at the peach-coloured rosebush that sat halfway along the path, placed, Jess always thought, to snag the unwary. 2 new small barrels sat by the front steps, filled with a purple flower she didn't recognise. She straightened her jacket, smoothed the hair from Tansy's face, leant forward and wiped a bit of something from the corner of her mouth, and then she rang the doorbell. Maria Costanza saw Tansy first. She gazed at her. and then up at Jess, and several expressions, none quite identifiable, flickered rapidly across her face. Jess answered them with her cheeriest smile. "Hey, Maria, we were in the area, and I just thought we couldn't pass without seeing Marty. And you." Maria Costanza stared at her. "We did try to call," Jess continued, her voice a sing-song and odd to her ears. "Quite a few times. I would have left a message, but..." "Hi, Granny!" Tansy ran forwards and threw herself at her grandmother's waist. Maria Costanza's hand went down, and she let it rest limply against Tansy's back. She had dyed her hair a shade too dark, Jess noted absently. Maria Costanza stayed like that for a moment, then glanced at the car, where Nicky stared out impassively from the rear window. "God, would it kill you to express some enthusiasm just once?" Jess thought. "Nicky will be over in a minute," she said, keeping the smile firmly on her face. "He's just woken up. I'm giving him a moment." They stood and faced each other, waiting. "So," Jess said when she didn't speak, and peered past the older woman down the hall.
He's not here," Maria Costanza said.
"Is he at work?" She had sounded more eager than she had intended. "I mean, it's lovely if he's feeling well enough to work."
"He's not here, Jessica."
"Is he ill?" Oh, Christ, she thought. Something's happened. And then she saw it. An emotion she was not sure she'd ever seen on Maria Costanza's features. Embarrassment. Jess watched her attempt to cover it. She glanced behind her, folded her arms. "So where is he?"
I think you should talk to him." Maria Costanza brought a hand to her mouth as if to prevent herself saying more, then extricated herself gently from her grandchild. "Hold on. I'll get you his address."
"His address?" She left Tansy and Jess standing on the doorstep and disappeared down the little hallway, half closing the door behind her. Tansy looked up quizzically. Jess smiled reassuringly. It wasn't quite as easy as it had been. The door opened again. She handed over a piece of paper.
"It will take you maybe 1 hour, maybe 1.5 hours, depending on the traffic."
Jess registered her stiff features, then looked past her to the little hallway, where nothing had changed in the 15 years she had known her. Nothing at all. And somewhere, in the back of Jess's head, a little bell began to chime. "Right," she said. She wasn't smiling anymore. Maria Costanza couldn't hold her gaze. She stooped then and put her palm against Tansy's cheek.
"You come back and stay with your nonna soon, yes?"
She looked up at Jess.
"You bring her back? It's been a long time."
That look of mute appeal, of acknowledgement in her duplicity, was more unnerving than almost anything she'd ever done in the years of their relationship. Jess swept Tansy towards the car. Mr. Nichols looked up. He didn't say anything. "Here." Jess handed him the paper. "We need to go here." Wordlessly, he began to program the postcode into the sat-nav. Her heart was thumping. She looked in the rearview mirror.
"You knew,"
she said when Tansy finally put her earphones in. Nicky pulled at his fringe, gazing out at his grandmother's house. "It was the last few times we've spoken to him on Skype. Granny would never have had that wallpaper." She didn't ask him where Marty was. She thought she probably had an idea, even then. They drove the hour in silence. Jess wanted to be reassuring, but she couldn't speak. A million possibilities ran through her head. Occasionally, she looked into the mirror watching Nicky. His face was closed, turned resolutely towards the roadside. She began slowly to reconsider his reluctance to come here, even to speak to his father these last few months, casting it in a new light. They drove through the dusky countryside to the outskirts of a new town, and an estate where the houses were box-fresh, laid out in careful, sweeping curves, and new cars gleamed outside like statements of intent. Mr. Nichols pulled up in Castle Court, where four cherry trees stood like sentinels along the narrow pavement upon which she suspected nobody ever walked. The house was newly built. Its Regency-style windows gleamed, its slate roof shone in the drizzle. She stared at it out of the window. "You okay?" They were the only two words Mr. Nichols had spoken the entire journey. "You wait here a minute, kids," Jess said, and climbed out. She walked up to the front door, double-checked the address on the bit of paper, then rapped on the brass knocker. Inside, she could hear the sound of a television, saw the vague shadow of someone moving under bright light. She knocked again. She barely felt the rain. Footsteps in the hallway. The door opened, and a blonde woman stood in front of her. She wore a dark red wool dress and matching pumps, and her hair was cut in one of those styles that women wear when they work in retail or banking, but don't want to look like they've entirely given up on the idea of being a rock chick. "Is Marty there?" Jess said. The woman made as if to speak, then looked Jess up and down at her flip-flops, at her crumpled white trousers, and in the several seconds that follow the faint hardening of her expression, Jess could see she knew. She knew about her. "Wait there," she said. The door half closed, and Jess heard her shout down the narrow corridor, "Mart? Mart?" "Mart." She heard his voice, muffled, laughing, saying something about television, and then her voice dropped. She saw their shadows behind the frosted glass panels, and then the door opened, and he stood there. Marty had grown his hair. He had a long, floppy fringe swept carefully to one side like a teenager. He wore jeans she didn't recognize, in deep indigo, and he had lost weight. He looked like someone she didn't know, and he had gone quite, quite pale. "Jess?" She couldn't speak. They stared at each other. He swallowed. "I was going to tell you." Right up to that point, a part of her had refused to believe it could be true. Right up to that point, she had thought there must be some huge mistake, that Marty was staying with a friend or he was ill again, and Maria Costanza, with her misplaced pride, just couldn't face admitting it. But there was no mistaking what was right in front of her. It took her several seconds to find her voice. This is where you've been living." She stumbled backwards, now taking in the immaculate front garden, the new three-piece suite just visible through the window. Her hip bumped against a car on the drive, and she put out her hand to support herself, pulling it away as if it burnt when she realized what it was. "All this time, we've been scratching around for the last 2 years just to stay warm and fed, and you're here with an executive home and a brand new Toyota." Marty glanced awkwardly behind him. "We need to talk, Jess." And then she saw the wallpaper in his dining room, the thick stripe, and it all fell into place. His insistence that they only speak at set times, the lack of a landline phone number, Maria Costanza's assurance that he was sleeping whenever she rang outside the usual time, her determination to get Jess off the phone as quickly as possible. "We need to talk." Jess was half laughing now. "Yes, let's talk, Marty. How about I talk? For 2 years, I've not made a single demand on you, not for money or time or childcare or help of any kind, because I thought you were ill. I thought you were depressed. I thought you were living with your mother."
"I was living with Mum."
"Till when?"
He compressed his lips.
"Till when, Marty?"
Her voice was shrill. 15 months.
"You were with your mum 15 months?
He looked at his feet.
"You've been here 15 months. You've been here more than a year."
"I wanted to tell you, but I knew that you'd..."
"What? Kick off? Because you're here, living a life of luxury, while your wife and kids are back home scrabbling around in the crap you left behind."
"Jess." She was briefly silenced as the door opened abruptly. A little girl appeared behind him, her hair a virgin sheet of blonde, wearing a Hollister sweatshirt and Converse trainers. She tugged at his sleeve.
It's your programme, Marty, she began.
And then she saw Jess and stopped.
Go to your mum, babe, he said quietly, his gaze flicking sideways. He put his hand gently on her shoulder. I'll be through in a minute.
She looked at Jess warily, perhaps picking up on some strange vibration in the air. She was the same age as Tansy. Go on. He pulled the door behind him. And that was when Jess's heart actually broke.
She has kids.
He swallowed. Two. Her hands went to her face, and then her hair. She turned and walked blindly back down the path. She didn't actually know where she was going.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
Jess, I'll never set out to. She spun round and flew at him. She wanted to batter him. She wanted to smash his stupid face and his expensive haircut. She wanted him to know the pain he had put his children through. She wanted him to pay. He ducked behind the car, and almost without knowing what she was doing, she found she was kicking at its oversized wheels, its gleaming panels, the stupid, bright, white, shiny, stupid, immaculate, stupid car. You lied! You lied to all of us, and I was trying to protect you. I can't believe! I can't! She kicked and felt the faint satisfaction as the metal gave, even as the pain shot up her foot. She kicked again and again, not caring, her fists raining blows on the window. Jess, the car, are you fucking mad? She rained blows down on that car because she could not rain the blows on him. She hit with her hands and her feet, not caring, sobbing with fury, her rasping breath loud in her ears. And when he wrenched her off it, wedging himself between her and the panels, his grip tight on her arms, she felt a momentary flicker of fear that they were into some new realm of craziness now, that her life had spun utterly out of control. And then she looked into his eyes, his coward's eyes, and there was a loud buzzing in her head. She wanted to smash Jess. Mr. Nichols's arm was around her waist, easing her backwards. Get off me! The kids are watching. Come on now. A hand on her arm. She couldn't breathe. A moan rose up through her whole body. She allowed herself to be pulled a few steps back. Marty was shouting something she couldn't hear through the din in her head.
Come. Come away.
The kids... She looked at the car and saw Tansy's face wide-eyed with shock. Nicky, a motionless black silhouette behind her. She looked to the other side at the executive house where two small pale faces watched from the living room, their mother behind them. When she saw Jess looking, she lowered the blind. You're mad, yelled Marty, staring at the dented panels of the car. Completely effing mad! She had begun to shake. Mr. Nichols put his arms around her and steered her into the car.
Get in. Sit down, he said, closing the door once she was inside.
Marty was walking slowly down the pathway towards them, his old swagger suddenly visible now that she was the one in the wrong. She thought he was about to pick a fight, but when he was about 15 feet away, he peered into the car, stooping slightly as if to check. And then she heard the rear door open behind her, and Tansy was out and running towards him. Daddy! She cried, and he swept her up in his arms, and then Jess no longer knew what she felt about anything. She wasn't sure how long she sat there, staring at the footwell. She couldn't think. She couldn't feel. She heard murmuring voices on the pathway, and at one point, Nicky reached forward and touched her shoulder lightly. I'm sorry, he said, his voice cracking. She reached behind and gripped his hand fiercely. Not your fault, she whispered. The door opened finally, and Mr. Nichols put his head in. His face was wet and rain dripped from his collar. Okay, Tansy's going to stay here for a couple of hours. She stared at him, suddenly alert. Oh no, she began. He doesn't get to have her. Not after what he's... This isn't about you and him, Jess. Jess turned towards the house. The front door was slightly ajar. Tansy was already inside.
But she can't stay there. Not with them.
He climbed into the driver's seat. Then he reached across and took her hand. His was ice cold and damp. She's had a bad day, and she asked if she could spend some time with him. And Jess, if this really is his life now, then surely she has to be a part of it.
But it's not
fair. I know. They sat there, the three of them, staring at the brightly lit little house. Her daughter was in there, with Marty's new family. It was as if someone had reached in, gripped her heart, and ripped it out through her ribs. She couldn't take her eyes from the window. What if she changes her mind? She'll be all alone and we don't know them. I don't know this woman. She could be... She's with her dad. She'll be okay. She stared at Mr. Nichols. His face was sympathetic, but his voice was oddly firm.
Why are you on his side? She whispered.
I'm not on his side. His fingers closed around hers. Look, we'll all go find somewhere to eat. We'll be back in a couple of hours. We stay close by, and we can come back for her any time if she needs us. No, I'll stay, said a voice from behind. I'll stay with her, so that she's not by herself. Jess turned. Nicky was gazing out of the window.
Are you sure?
I'll be fine. His face was a blank. Anyway, sort of want to hear what he says. Mr. Nichols saw Nicky to the front door. She watched her stepson, his long, lanky legs in his skinny black jeans, his diffident, awkward way of standing as the door opened to let him in. The blonde woman tried to smile at him. She peered surreptitiously past him at the car. It was possible, Jess observed distantly, that she was actually frightened of her. The door closed behind them. Jess shut her eyes, not wanting to see them there, in that house, not wanting to imagine what was going on behind that door. And then Mr. Nichols was in the car, bringing with him a blast of cold air. Come on, he said. It's okay, we'll be back before you know it. They sat in a roadside cafe. She couldn't eat. She drank coffee, no longer caring if it would leave her awake. Mr. Nichols bought a sandwich and just sat there opposite her. She wasn't sure he knew what to say. 2 hours, she kept telling herself. 2 hours, and then I can have them back. She just wanted to be home then. She wanted to be back in the car with her children, away from here. Away from Marty and his lies and his new girlfriend and pretend family. She didn't care about anything else. She watched the clock hands edge round and let her coffee cool. Every minute felt like infinity. And then, 10 minutes before they were due to leave, the phone rang. Jess snatched it up, a number she didn't recognize, Marty's voice. Can you leave them with me tonight? It knocked the breath clean out of her. Oh, no, she said when she could find her voice. You don't get to keep them, just like that. I'm just trying to explain it all to them. Well, good luck with that, because I'm damned if I understand it. Her voice lifted in the little cafe. She saw the people at the nearby tables turn their heads. I couldn't tell you, Jess, okay? Because I knew you'd react like you did. Oh, so it's my fault. Oh, of course it is. We were over. You knew it as well as I did. She was standing. She wasn't aware of having got to her feet. Mr. Nichols, for some reason, stood too. I couldn't give a flying fuck about you and me, okay? But we've been living on the breadline since you left, and now I find out you're living with someone else, with your brand new sofa and your shiny car, supporting her kids, even as you said you couldn't lift a finger for hours. Yes, it's just possible I'm going to react badly to that one, Marty. It's not my money I'm living on, it's Lindsay's money. I can't use her money to pay for your kids. My kids. My kids! She was out from behind the table now, walking blindly towards the door. She was dimly aware of Mr. Nichols summoning the waitress. Look, said Marty, Tansy really wants to stay over. She's obviously upset about this maths thing. She asked me to ask you. Please. Jess couldn't speak. She just stood in the cold car park, her eyes closed, her knuckles white around the phone. Plus, I really want to sort things out with Nicky.
You are unbelievable.
Just let me sort things out with the kids. Please. You and I, we can talk afterwards, but just tonight, while they're here. I've missed them, Jess. I know it's all my fault. I know I've been rubbish, but I'm actually glad it's all out there. I'm glad you know what's going on, and I want to move forward now. She stared ahead of her at the car park. In the distance, a police car's blue lights flashed. Her foot had begun to throb. She stood in the car park and put her hand against her face, and finally she said, "Put Tansy on." There was a short silence, the sound of a door. Jess took a deep breath. "Mum? Tans? Sweetheart, are you okay?"
"I'm fine, Mum. They've got terrapins. One has a gammy leg. It's called Mike. Can we get a terrapin?"
We'll talk about it." She could hear a saucepan clash in the background, the sound of a tap running.
You really want to spend the night? You don't have to, you know. You do whatever makes you feel happy."
"I would quite like to stay. Susie's nice. She's going to lend me her high school musical pyjamas."
"Susie?"
"Lindsay's daughter. It's going to be like a sleepover, and she has those beads where you make a picture and stick it together with an iron."
"Right."
There was a brief silence. Jess could hear muffled talking in the background. "So, what time are you picking me up tomorrow?" She swallowed and tried to keep her voice level. "After breakfast, 9 o'clock. And if you change your mind, you just call me, okay? Any time, and I'll pick you up straight away. Even if it's the very middle of the night, it doesn't matter."
"I know.
I'll come any time. I love you, sweetie. Any time you want to call."
"Okay.
Will you put Nicky on?"
"Love you. Bye."
Nicky's voice was unreadable. "I've told him I'll stay," he said, "but only to keep an eye on Tans."
"Okay. I'll make sure we're somewhere close by. Is she, the woman, she okay? I mean, will you all be okay?"
"Lindsay? She's fine."
"And you? You're all right with this? He's not..."
"I'm fine." There was a long silence. "Jess?"
"Yes?"
"Are you okay?" Her face crumpled then. She took a silent breath, put her hand up and wiped at the tears that were running silently down her cheeks. She hadn't known there were that many tears in her. She didn't answer Nicky until she could be sure they hadn't soaked her voice too.
"I'm fine, lovey.
You have a good time, and don't worry about me. I'll see you both in the morning." Mr. Nichols was behind her. He took his phone from her in silence, his eyes not leaving her face. "I found her somewhere to sleep while they'll let us take the dog."
"Is there a bar?"
Jess asked, wiping at her eyes with the back of her hand.
"What?"
"I need to get drunk, Ed.
Really, really drunk."
He held out an arm and she took it.
"Plus, I think I may have broken my toe."
Chapter 23. Ed. So, once upon a time, Ed met a girl who was the most optimistic person he had ever known. A girl who wore flip-flops in the hope of spring. She seemed to bounce through life like Tigger. The things that would have felled most people didn't seem to touch her. Or if she did fall, she bounced right back. She fell again, plastered on a smile, dusted herself down and kept going. He never could work out whether it was the single most heroic or the most idiotic thing he'd ever seen. And then he stood on the curb outside a four-bedroomed executive home somewhere near Carlisle and watched as that same girl saw everything she'd believed in stripped away until nothing was left but a ghost who sat in his passenger seat, gazing unseen through the windscreen. The sound of her optimism draining away was audible. And something cracked open in his heart. He had booked a holiday cabin on the side of a lake, 20 minutes from Marty's, or rather his girlfriend's, house. He couldn't find a hotel within 100 miles that would take the dog, and the last receptionist he had spoken to, a jovial woman who called him Duck 8 times, suggested he just go self-catering, and told him of a new place she knew, run by her friend's daughter-in-law. He'd had to pay for 3 days, their minimum stay, but he didn't care. Jess didn't ask. He wasn't sure she even noticed where they were. They picked up the keys from reception. He followed the path through the trees. They pulled up in front of the cabin, and he unloaded Jess and the dog and saw them inside. She was limping badly by then. He remembered suddenly the ferocity with which she had kicked the car, in flip-flops. "Have a long bath," he said, flicking on all the lights and closing the curtains. It was too dark outside by now to see anything. "Go on, try and relax. I'll go and get her some food. And maybe an ice pack." She turned and nodded. The smile she raised in thanks was barely a smile at all. The closest supermarket was a supermarket in name only. There were 2 baskets of tired vegetables and shelves of long-life food with brand names he hadn't heard of, sitting, as they might well have done for months, under flickering strip lights. He bought a couple of ready meals, bread, coffee, milk, frozen peas, and painkillers for her foot, and a couple of bottles of wine. He needed a drink, too. He was standing at the checkout when his phone beeped. He wrestled it out of his pocket, wondering if it was Jess, and then he remembered that her phone had run out of credit 2 days previously. "Hello, darling. So sorry you can't make tomorrow. We do hope to see you before too long. Love, Mum. P.S. Dad sends his love. Bit poorly today." £22.80. The girl had said it twice before he registered. "Oh, sorry." He fished around for his card and held it out to her. "Card machine's not working. There's a sign." Ed followed her gaze. "Cash or check only," it said in laboriously outlined ballpoint letters. "You're kidding me, right?"
"Why would I be kidding you?"
She chewed, meditatively, at whatever was in her mouth. "I'm not sure I've got enough cash on me," Ed said. She gazed at him impassively. "You don't take cards?"
"It's what the sign says."
"Well, do you not have a manual card machine?"
"Most people round here pay cash," she said.
Her expression said it was obvious that he was not from around here. "Okay, where's the nearest cash machine?"
"Carlisle."
He thought she was joking. She wasn't.
"If you haven't got the money, you'll have to put the food back."
"I've got the money. Just give me a minute." He dug around in his pockets, ignoring the barely suppressed sighs and rolled eyes from those behind him. And by some miracle, from his inside jacket pocket and the bottom of his wallet, he was able to scrape up cash for everything bar the onion barges. He counted it all out, and she raised her eyebrows ostentatiously as she rang it up, and shoved the barges to one side, where they would doubtless be shoved back into a chiller cabinet some time later. Ed, in turn, shoved it all into a carrier bag that would give way even before he reached the car, and tried not to think about his mother. He was cooking when Jess limped downstairs. At least, he had 2 plastic trays rotating noisily in the microwave, which was about as far as he had ever immersed himself in the culinary arts. She was wearing a toweling bathrobe, and had her hair wrapped in a white bath towel turban. He had never understood how women did that. His ex had done it too. He used to wonder if it was something women got taught, like periods and hand washing. Her bare face was oddly beautiful. "Here." Ed held out a glass of wine. She took it from him as if she barely noticed. He had started a fire, and she sat down in front of the flames, apparently still lost in her thoughts. He handed her the frozen peas for her foot, then busied himself with the rest of the microwave meals, following the instructions on the packaging. "I texted Nikki," he told her, as he stabbed the plastic film with a fork, just to tell him where we were staying. She took another sip of her wine. Was he okay? He was fine. They were just about to eat. She flinched slightly as he said this, and Ed immediately